One of the things that delight me in the people I love is their differences. Each of my beloved family members behaved differently in life, so naturally each of them chose to die in their own way. My dear Aunt Anne was a social activist and bridge player. She said as she came into her mid-80s, "I want to die after playing bridge. I want to play bridge to the end." And she did. She resided in assisted living. She was really living there, not just surviving. She'd made good friends, and they came to play bridge with her within a day of her death. My Aunt Ruth was a homemaker and loved to have family nearby. She chose to die another way. She had suffered from breast cancer for much of her last years, and when she knew the time was near, she wanted to stay at home and have pain control. Miraculously, though this was long before palliative care was common in the U.S., she achieved her dream and died with her family around her, not suffering more than she could tolerate. My dad was the most independent of the brothers and sisters. He always went his own way. Again, as he neared the end of his life, Alex wanted control over the time and place of his death. My dad was an early member of the Hemlock Society, and I was not surprised by his choice. As his Parkinson's worsened, after his 90th birthday, he decided to take action. His health had been declining for some time. His tremor made it hard to eat. His voice was just a whisper, and even rolling over in bed was very hard. But the final blow, the reason he decided to take his life, was that he was falling. Falling often and harder each time. Dad's deepest fear was that he would fall, break a bone, and have to move out of his own home where he could control the time and means of his death. He worried he'd be forced into a nursing home where the staff would feel it was their duty to keep him alive, no matter how much he suffered nor wanted to die. Many of us probably know that Parkinson's is not usually fatal itself. What is fatal are the complications, especially for old people. In the final stages of the disease, infections, pneumonia, and falling often prove fatal. My dad was in the final stages. Finally, Dad decided he had taken his last fall, and that he would end his life on his terms. He took the 19 pain pills that he had slowly stashed away and doubtless went to sleep believing he would die peacefully in his bed. Unfortunately, he awoke from his intentional overdose. Who knew that pain pills are unlikely to be effective in this situation? He then tried to slit his wrists, but due to his tremor, he failed at that too. When he had been out of touch for too long, we were worried about him, and my husband and I went to his house to check up with him. He was not responding to phone or email. We found him that night, despondent over his dual failures, as he saw them, and ready to do what he needed to do at any price. Despite knowing that there would be a police investigation, before we left that night, Dad strongly intimated that he would shoot himself when we left. We let him know that we loved him, And then we had to say goodbye. To stay would have put us at risk for murder charges. Ours is a faith of choices. Back when I joined my first UU church about 20 years ago, we were given a book named Our Chosen Faith. There was a little ritual at that church, and we were given this blue volume. It was written by two of the luminaries of our religion in the modern era, John Buren's and Forrest Church. This book points out the many ways that our faith rests on choice. Reasoned choice, heartfelt, soul-filled, spiritual choice. You name the flavor of choice, but again and again, free and responsible choice is central to who we are. Buren's and Church chose to quote Edward Schemp to explain this part of our faith. You might even say to explain the totality of our faith in a brief passage. Schemp was a member of a UU church, and he was writing to explain why he and his sons were the plaintiffs in a Supreme Court case that ultimately declared Bible reading in public schools to be unconstitutional. Unitarian Universalism is a fierce belief in the way of freedom and reverence for the sacred dignity of each individual. Unitarian Universalism is cooperation with the universe that created us. It is a celebration of life. It is being in love with goodness and justice. It is a sense of humor about absolutes. Unitarian Universalism is faith in people, hope for tomorrow's child, and confidence in continuity that spans all time. It looks not to a perfect heaven, but towards a good earth. It is respectful of the past, but not limited to it. It is trust in growing and conspiracy with change. It is spiritual responsibility for a moral tomorrow. This reading, widely quoted by the UUA, is equally applicable to the question of how we die in 2015 as it was to whether a Bible should be read in public schools in the 1960s. Let me be clear. I am talking about aiding death plans when an adult's death is imminent and when they are in sound mind. When doctors have declared that death will come within 6 months or so, and at the same time that hospice care is offered, and always only when the competent adult makes that choice. I am talking about those who are going to die soon anyway, are allowed to die. I want to be equally clear. I am not talking about suicide. When an otherwise healthy person is thinking of suicide, it is time to get help. Talk with your doctor or your minister or a suicide hotline. When people are in sound mind and failing body, they should be allowed to die when and as they choose. If your beloved wants to savor every moment of life, drawing on all the medical care and services possible, I bless them for that choice. If your beloved believes that their God calls on them to suffer as Jesus suffered, and I know people of faith who feel this way, I bless them. If your beloved believes that they are going to meet their Savior in heaven and nothing should be done to change that in any way, I bless them. If your beloved wants to structure the end of their life so that they will not be resuscitated in the event of a medical emergency or not receive antibiotics at this time, I bless them. If they want to live in hospice with all the palliative care and support our system can provide, I bless them. And if they want to receive a medical prescription for a lethal dose of medication to speed their death legally, working with their doctors and family, I also bless them. But you know, that last choice isn't legal here in Maryland, nor in almost any of the other states. Rather, people who want to make that choice must make another, arguably harder choice. Will they restrict their consumption of water and food to die at a time and place of their choosing? That's what a UU friend of mine, who was a member of my congregation for 40 years, just did, and we held her wake last night. Or will they try to kill themselves with pills, perhaps unsuccessfully, as my dad did? Or will they use the gun their father gave them when they were young? Let me be clear, what we are talking about should rightly be called aid in dying. It is sometimes called assisted suicide, but that is wrong because the person who has received a fatal diagnosis has had a medical specialist confirm that this is a reasonable choice and the physician has provided the prescription. I've heard it said that suicide is a permanent solution to a problem that is likely temporary. There is nothing temporary about the situation Aid in Dying seeks to resolve. Even worse, it is sometimes called euthanasia, and that it is not that either, since with Aid in Dying, the person who wants to die takes all of the initiative, including taking the pills themselves. Euthanasia is someone else doing something to you against your will. Of course, a law making aid in dying legal must be carefully crafted to ensure that the person making the choice is of sound mind, sure, confident, and unpressured in their decision. And in nearly 20 years of implementation in Oregon, and not quite that much in Washington, but in many, the law has worked well in all cases. One of the fascinating things about the Oregon law is that many who ask their doctors for the prescription don't actually use it. Instead, it's a comfort to know that they can use it if needed. About a third of those who fill the prescription don't use it. I can imagine holding that prescription in my hand and not using it today. My grandmother was a lifelong smoker, and after about 5 years after she'd stopped, I said, "I don't know that I've told you, Grand Catherine, I am so proud of you for quitting." And she said, "Oh, I never quit." "What do you mean?" And she said, "I just don't smoke today. Because I can think about not smoking today. I can't look to a future of never smoking." And that's the image that I have of somebody holding that bottle. Another fascinating thing about the Oregon law is that many UUs helped pass it. Some of the first organizing meetings about the prospective and at that time very radical proposed law were in a UU church in Portland. A UU minister spearheaded that effort. Additionally, back in 1988, once again way ahead of its time, our UU General Assembly voted a resolution stating, and I'm just going to compress this because if you've ever read one of these, you know they just go on and on and on. But the good part is, guided by our belief as Unitarian Universalists that human life has inherent dignity which may be compromised when life is extended beyond the will or ability of a person to sustain that dignity, and believing that it is every person's inviolable right to determine in advance the course of action to be taken in the event that there is no reasonable expectation of recovery, Unitarian Universalists should petition legislators to support legislation that will create legal protections for the right to die with dignity in accordance with one's own choice. What could a death with aid in dying look like? Maybe you have watched the beautiful movie How to Die in Oregon. That movie shows us how one woman who had been blessed by one long remission from her cancer and knew that there would not be a second chose to live. How to Die in Oregon, a remarkable movie. So here we are, sitting in a room that I know many of you have celebrated the lives and honored the deaths of your loved ones. And here we are, talking about choices once again. We are talking about respecting each individual's choice in this very important matter. Our denomination has been talking and working on this since 1988. What I think would be my choice is not something I force on you, but instead our society should offer you. Then each of us decides for ourselves, and our families can provide support. Now let me tell you the end of my dad's story that I wish could have been true. My family would have been with him. He surely would not have had to shoot himself while alone rather than face a death that he felt was worse. Dad should have been able to die at his own hand, to take prescription medicine, to end his dying process once it became unbearable. And surely my husband should not have had to have found his body. Taking a prescription like that is the choice that terminally ill, mentally competent adults have a legal right to make in 5 other states: Oregon, Washington, Montana, Vermont, and just recently, California. Again, I say it doesn't really matter what my choice would be at the end of my life, nor what yours would be. What matters is that each of us in sound mind and failing body should be able to choose the way that we want to die. Last term, a Death with Dignity bill came up in Annapolis, and it failed. It will come up again this term, and I hope it will pass with the help of you use. You can help pass that bill. But what more personal and immediate things can you do? I urge you to have conversations with your family, with your families about your desires and theirs. I was so pleased when Reverend Carl said that during the break between the two services and again after this service, that there will be a time for the beginning of those conversations to occur. If you don't know what you'd want, I urge you to do some reading or talk with others about what they want. If you don't know what your loved ones would want, please have those hard conversations. I liken this to sort of the way you use do sex education versus the way the rest of the world does. You know, the rest of the world barely, maybe, possibly, a parent gets out a brief little something and calls it a conversation, one way. We, by contrast, have the Our Whole Lives educational program. And deep and profound ongoing conversations happen in that context. That, I believe, across the lifespan, as with OWL, is what we need for these conversations. My hope is to live in a world where all those who are suffering and will soon die can live and breathe their last, surrounded by those they love, able to live unto the end, having made their choices and with the opportunity to fulfill their choices legally. Blessed be. Amen. And let it be so.